are listening to the True Frequency Radio Network.
No hate, no hype, no fear.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD, and we are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday. Lucky for us, today is Wednesday. We are like halfway there, guys, and probably most of you are more than halfway there because I imagine some of you are not working today, and I doubt a lot of you will be working tomorrow. So, 5-day weekend, awesome. Super jealous of all of you guys out there. Not really. I'm actually really looking forward to being live on the air tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Greg Morse, and it'll be a little bit of an extended interview tomorrow. For all of you who have been following along with Greg Morse's information, we're obviously going to be talking about the mortgage fraud quite a bit tomorrow. And what a great opportunity for all of us to have this discussion together while we're not at work, while we can actually talk to our friends and family. Because I'll tell you what, the potential right now really, really exists for you to know someone, if it's not yourself, but in your friend circle or in your family, that is going to pay their mortgage for 30 years and not end up owning their home. So this is a really important topic that we all need to be on top of right now, and Greg Morse has done such a great job bringing it to the forefront for all of us. I want to also recommend people go to redpillreports.com. I like it when people go there every day because you guys can then follow along with all the news articles that we try and go over and see just how bad I am at my job. But also on the site today, and for the foreseeable future, are the two articles that really, really need to be discussed around the Thanksgiving table this weekend, you guys. They are Your Mortgage Could Be Compromised, and another article, Learn If Your Mortgage Is Compromised. Both of those articles you guys need to print out, take them home for the holiday, get them in front of your friends and family, and let them in on what this all means, because this is just huge. So if you guys wanted to go to redpillreports.com, right there at the top of the page are links to both of those articles. Super easy to print those out and share them around. That's the only way we're going to get this information to spread. So, and for those of you who are joining Red Pill Reports for the first time, thank you guys very much for being here, and for all of you guys who have made this a daily stop on your prescription for truth. We really appreciate it. I've been getting a lot of great emails again. Great email from Susan in Korea yesterday. Super cool to be hearing from the international community as this Red Pill family continues to grow. Just warms my heart. And as a side note, for any of you international kids, Michael down in Costa Rica talking to you too, if you guys have local news that's going on in your area that we're not able to get here, please send it along. I'd love to let your peer groups know what's going on also. And obviously the international news doesn't reach quite as far as the national news does here. So if you guys have stories you'd like us to be covering, or important topics, guests, things like that, please send us an email. We love getting email. Without you guys, we would be doing nothing. So it's all about the listener here at this point. And also want to remind everybody that Friday we'll be speaking with Michael Rosecliff again. Michael Rosecliff is probably one of the most entertaining and informative young men that I've had the pleasure of coming across. His main areas of focus are economic and geopolitical events, but he has developed a piece of software called Looking Glass, which is giving him something like 96% accuracy at predicting future geopolitical and economic events. So the insight that Michael will be giving us on Friday will be second to none. And in the 11 o'clock hour today, Chris and Cherie Geo are going to be here. Now, obviously, many of you guys know who Chris and Cherie Geo are. They're veteran broadcasters. with a syndicated show over on GCN, and they're also the program management team for Truth Frequency Radio. Please support Truth Frequency Radio, by the way. And I'm telling you though, I talked to Chris a little bit yesterday and thought, okay, we'll talk about the history of their union, how they kind of got together and their background and things like that, and talk a little bit about how Truth Frequency came about. It might be fairly interesting. I've heard from other people who've heard the story that it's fairly interesting. But then I started to talk to Chris about what some of the other topics. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking geopolitics, eugenics, economics, alternative history, Sumerian text, interdimensional exploration. We're going to talk about that, I think, today. A little interdimensional exploration. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy this conversation. It's going to be diverse, and it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be very entertaining. And we'll let Chris kind of shake some of the cobwebs out from his normal day-to-day life and share with us some interesting stuff. So much news to cover today. Oh, my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, the news desk was livid all night, just all kinds of stories coming across the wire. I mean, even up in just till 5 minutes ago when I finally had to say, okay, enough is enough. I've got way too much to cover as it is. And again, if you go to redpillreports.com, you find the show section. You'll see all of the links to these articles that we want to talk about. I'm going to jump into some international news quickly, but then I'm going to come back and we're going to talk quite a bit about Ferguson today, because there were obviously, since the decision has been made, a lot of information has come out about what has happened during the trial. Some of the information that Officer Wilson presented at the trial, there has been, we anticipated about 80 cities. That blew up to about 200 over the last day in terms of rioting and protesting going all over the United States. Just absolutely insane. There's been some other developments I want to talk about, because I think the mainstream media is going to blow over some stuff. So we'll talk about that as well. We've got some economic stuff and some health news today also. But in the international news, Britain is going to undertake a second review of their arms export licenses to Israel to ensure that equipment could not be used in a way that would breach international law. And this was according to the British government on Monday. The government now has already conducted one of these reviews back in August in a response to the Jewish state's conflict with Hamas in Gaza, after which it said it would suspend 12 licenses to export military items to Israel if the hostilities resumed. So Monday, it said it was going to conduct another review a day after Israeli forces shot dead a Palestinian in the Gaza Strip near the border with Israel. This is the first such fatality since a 50-day war ended back in August. And the reason they're doing this review again is because they want to ensure that this new information is taken into account. And in light of the fact that a ceasefire has been in place for more than 2 months, ministers decided this month to carry out more review. So, yeah, maybe we probably shouldn't be supplying arms to Israel, given the fact that we already give them, just from the United States, $8.5 million a day, and they're the fourth largest weapon producer on the planet. But I think Britain is maybe going to start taking a closer look at how some of the weapons that they're providing to Israel are being used, and I completely support that. Ukraine in the news this morning, as usual, have Poroshenko, the ex-chocolate billionaire, has come out now saying that Ukraine will hold a referendum on joining NATO once it has met certain criteria for membership. So very important. They're going to push ahead with a public referendum on joining NATO, according to Poroshenko, once they have, quote-unquote, worked out the criteria. And this, of course, comes on the report from last week where the Kremlin official and Putin have called for a 100% guarantee that the Ukraine would not even be thinking about joining NATO. So you can see where this contention is going to be coming here. But what's interesting about this is that Poroshenko, he didn't say what the criteria would be for Ukraine's membership in NATO. And NATO actually has come out and said, we don't really have any criteria. There's really not a fixed or rigid list of criteria. So not really sure what you guys are waiting for. But strong indication now from the Ukraine that they are going to push forward to join NATO. Obviously, it's going to cause more tension between them and Russia. We'll see what Russia's response is going to be to that. Speaking of Russia, France has now suspended its warships deal with Russia over the Ukraine crisis. This is a very big deal. This is a really big deal. France will not hand over to Russia one of the first of two state-of-the-art warships built for the Russians until Moscow halts its military action in Ukraine, according to ministers in France. The Vladivostok has been undergoing sea trials with Russian crew in the French Atlantic port, and was officially due to be delivered at the end of this month. However, Paris now announced that the deal, which was opposed by the U.S. and Russia's Baltic neighbors, will be put on hold during the Ukraine crisis and is now suspended until further notice. The statement said that the French president considers the current situation in the east of Ukraine still does not allow for the delivery of the first BPC, which is a control and command vessel, and therefore considers it appropriate to suspend the authorization of delivery until further notice. A second Mistral-class assault vessel, the Sevastopol, named after the Black Sea port in Crimea, has been that was annexed by Moscow, was also due for delivery next year. And 2 weeks ago, Russian officials actually threatened to sue France for breach of contract, warning serious repercussions if it does not hand over the Vladivostok by the end of November. So France putting themselves in the crosshairs. I do not know how you would defend against contractual obligations, but France is going to try and do it. So we shall see what happens, and we'll see what Russia's response to France is, if it's a lawsuit or if something more extreme is going to happen. Interesting information coming out of Nicaragua right now. This is something I did not know of, but on December 22nd this year, Nicaragua will begin construction on a massive canal that will bisect the country. Numerous independent scientists and engineers believe that the canal will be a disaster for both the people and the environment of Nicaragua. And although the company hired to build the canal promised to study its environmental and social impacts, that work actually won't be completed until April of 2015, which will be about 4 months into the project. The Nicaraguan government, though, is celebrating the project's launch, and one presidential confidant is calling the canal a Christmas present for the country. But based on the studies that have been conducted, the project's likely impacts include 1,500 square miles of forests, wetlands, and coastlands, which will be dug up or disrupted, including 9 different protected areas, potential losses to endangered species such as tapirs, spider monkeys, jaguars, eagles, and nesting sea turtles, potential for water contamination in Lake Nicaragua, which actually supplies most of the country's drinking water, and violations of the Nicaraguan Constitution, which protects the land rights of indigenous and Afro-descendant pole armors and indigenous people, and also loss of the hurricane-buffering mangroves replaced by a flood-prone waterway. So Nicaragua going forward on a huge canal project, potential impact to the people there is pretty astounding. Not any indication in this article what the potential benefits are to the people of Nicaragua, but I would imagine in this case the benefits may not outweigh the costs. But that's what I know about that right now. Another startling report coming out of the New York Times today that suggests that some of the weapons recently supplied to the Iraqi forces by the United States taxpayer have already ended up in the hands of the Islamic State jihadists. And this is a testament of the entrenched corruption in the Iraq's military that threatens to undermine U.S. efforts against the Islamic State, ISIL, or whatever moniker they're using today. Back in its 2015 budget, the Pentagon had requested $1.3 billion for Iraqi military weapons, but some of the weapons recently supplied by the army has already ended up on the black market and in the hands of the Islamic State fighters, according to Iraqi officers and lawmakers. The American officials directed questions to the Iraqi government, according to this report from the Times, and one of the colonels of the internal Iraqi security forces told the Times that he said, "I told the Americans, don't give us any weapons through the army, not even one piece, because corruption is everywhere and you will not see any of it. Our people will steal it." So President Obama has requested an additional 1,500 troops for the advise and assist mission in Iraq, and these soldiers are obviously going to double the number that are already there. However, reducing corruption is not part of the advisor's role, one official from America involved with the effort told the Times, and there is no reason to believe that the advisor's presence will reduce corruption. Nevertheless, the Iraqi war veterans told the Times that advisors could work with the Iraqi forces to reduce the military's troubles with kickbacks, inflated payrolls, and other graft The Times also noted that while it is unclear whether the 3,000-strong U.S. force that the president has approved for in the mission of, in Iraq is enough to deal with the corruption that has infected the ranks of the military. So obviously the Times is saying even if those 3,000 people were there to disrupt the corruption, probably not going to happen. And despite the corruption problems, the United States has insisted that the Iraqi military act as a conduit for any new aid and armaments being supplied for a counteroffensive, including money, weapons, and things like that, intended for tribal fighters willing to push out the Islamic State. So, taxpayer money going to weapons, weapons going to Iraq, Iraq not able to handle said weapons, giving them to ISIS. Par for the course. Excited to be a part of it all. The Netherlands have come out and they said they will not recognize Palestinian statehood right now because it would not help restart peace talks with Israel. And this is according to a Dutch foreign minister, Bert Conders. Conders, who replaced fellow labor politician Frans Timmermans last month, rejected the policy, rejected the possibility of recognizing a Palestinian state in the near future during the debate in Parliament. He goes on to say, we do not find that it is correct to recognize the Palestinian state. It must be part of negotiations. In that sense, it would be introduced at a strategic moment. So what is he saying there? He is saying that granting statehood to the Palestinians is a bargaining chip, and it would be better played when that bargaining chip is worth more to the Netherlands. That is essentially what I'm reading here. So that's what's going on with that. There are obviously several European communities that are and have voted either in legislation or in symbolic referendum votes to declare Palestine as a state, but the Netherlands not following suit with that right now. Let's see here. A little bit more information coming out of Iran. We have obviously been following the talks in Tehran regarding the dropping of sanctions against Iran in hopes that they would stop trying to enrich uranium and trying to create a nuclear weapon. But top Iranian leaders have now been celebrating the recently inked extension in the nuclear negotiations with the West, with leading military figures and politicians saying that the deal is a sign that the Americans have clearly surrendered to Iran's might. And as the negotiations in Vienna break up so that leaders from all sides can return to their countries for further deliberations, the Iranians have already begun mocking the West and insisting that the country's nuclear rights would soon be recognized. And with a seven-month extension in talks, originally scheduled to expire Monday of this week, now they are set to start in early December. Nuclear experts are predicting that Iran will continue its most controversial nuclear work until they have enriched, until they have enough enriched fuel for a bomb by June of 2015. Now let's think about that for a second. June of 2015, new scheduled extended talks beginning December. What is 7 months from December? Well, that's July. So now we essentially, according to experts, just extended the talks past the point where Iran, it is likely thought, will have enough enriched fuel to create a bomb. So have we shot ourselves in the foot here? Yes, that's exactly what we've done. And Iran is probably right, because if we're going to give them 7 months to do something that's only going to take them 6 months to do, well, that's just stupid, isn't it? I think it is. Okay. Let's move to, well, I got one other story I probably ought to cover here in the international news, the Islamic State, getting back to this Islamic State. An airstrike initiated after Australian forces discovered a network of hidden caves and bunkers in Iraq has killed as many as 100 Islamic State fighters. The attack on a network of caves and tunnels near Kirkuk was carried out about a week ago after the RAAF Super Hornet crew spotted people moving along the side of a mountain and then disappearing. So essentially what they found was a very large and well-established hidden network of caves and bunkers that were concealed in a hillside near Kirkuk. They essentially hit 40 different targets backed up by large-scale ground defenses by Kurdish forces, and they successfully shut that tunnel system down. So if you believe in the whole ISIS thing, that could be considered good news. I myself don't, so I don't really care. But I thought I'd mention it anyway because some of you out there might care. So, moving into the national front right now, my goodness, as I said, the Newswire has been alive all night. First and foremost, before we jump into Ferguson, I want to give everybody a heads up just in case you've been living inside and don't own any windows. But a powerful storm warning is in effect right now, and it is forecasted to disrupt Thanksgiving travel plans for millions of Americans, and it began its march up the East Coast early this morning. They are already calling it a nor'easter. It is already bringing rain from northern Florida all the way up to Maryland, and by 3:30 a.m. Eastern, the forecasters warn it would bring up to 12 inches of snow in some areas as it moved north into one of the busiest travel days of the year. So right now we're talking about New York, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Boston metro areas. They're likely to see snow before noon today and can expect as much as 3 inches, but there will also be larger accumulations north in a swath pretty much between the Poconos and Maine. So if you guys are going to be on the road, add extra time, be very safe, be very cognizant of the fact that you could get stuck in your vehicles if you're up in the Northeast, so be planning ahead. For those traveling by air, more than 220 flights have already been canceled in and or out of the United States by 3:30 this morning, and more than a third of these are at the Newark Liberty International and New York's LaGuardia Airport. So, unfortunately, guys, Thanksgiving travel could be really disrupted by this storm up in the Northeast, so please, everybody, just be careful, pay attention. If it's not worth going, don't go. Just be safe. Be in your home. Okay, let's move on to Ferguson and related stories. The Ferguson protesters filled up streets last night across the country as the protests spread from coast to coast. So a day after we learned that Wilson won't be facing any criminal charges for killing an unarmed teenager, Michael Brown, protests sprouted up in more than 170 cities yesterday. Some demonstrations blocked bridges, tunnels, major highways. But unlike the violence that erupted in Ferguson on Monday night, most of the protests across the country on Tuesday were really largely peaceful. New York saw a massive protest wind its way from Union Square to FDR Drive and then to the United Nations, Times Square, and to Harlem. So that happened there. Police were obviously out in large numbers, but they let people go. As I said, moderately peaceful in that one. Oakland, California is probably the greatest concentration of turmoil Tuesday night, where vandals smashed the windows of a car dealership and looted several buildings, including a T-Mobile cell phone store, because nothing says bring me justice like looting a cell phone store. But some also set bonfires in the city. One row of bonfires stretched across a road, blocking off access. And you can see that if you go do a search for CNN footage. In Los Angeles, a stretch of the 101 freeway was shut down in both directions after protesters took roadblocks from the streets along with debris and placed them on the freeway. And demonstrators also gathered outside of the Los Angeles Police Department headquarters. According to one of the officers there, protesters were demonstrating very peacefully. Boston saw a march of about 1,000 protesters take to the street Tuesday night. Denver saw hundreds of people take to the streets. Officers tried to prevent demonstrators from marching onto the interstate, but most protesters dispersed peacefully. But there were a small group that refused and were arrested by officers. In Dallas, about 5 protesters were arrested after marching onto Interstate 35, according to CNN. Protesters in Washington lay down on the sidewalk outside of the police headquarters to protest as if they were dead. And some of them had handwritten notes on their chest saying that Black Lives Matter, a sentiment I could not agree more with. In Minneapolis, a woman in a group blocking an intersection was unfortunately run over by a car. That was some pretty startling footage that you can see if you do a quick YouTube search for Minneapolis protest woman hit by car. And in Chicago, about 200 members of the Black Youth Project staged a sit-in outside of Mayor Rahm Emanuel's office Tuesday afternoon, and they planned to be there for about 28 hours. In Atlanta, more protests with Public Enemy anthems pumping in the background from speakers. Again, though, mostly civil, mostly peaceful protesting going on across the country. So we will see what happens today. I do also want to mention that St. Louis did me very proud last night. There was a large, large protest group that gathered in front of the St. Louis County Police Department for a silent protest, and it was exceptionally, exceptionally powerful to see. So perhaps some of the hooliganism is wearing off at this point. One can only hope. We'll obviously see what happens with the rest of today. In this story, also dealing with Ferguson, as everyone is aware, you know, once the decision was made, the prosecutor decided to release 24 volumes of material covering all 23 of the meetings that the grand jury held between August and November 21st. And a lot of people are starting to delve through these documents to see specifically what it was that Darren Wilson had said about the shooting. And I want to kind of read some of this stuff to you because I think these are really important points. The first and foremost point to be made was that Darren Wilson had never used his firearm on duty before the shooting. He had never fired his gun before shooting Michael Brown ever in his life. He also testified that the area was quote-unquote hostile. He says there are a lot of gangs that reside in that area and a lot of violence in that area. There's a lot of gun activity, drug activity, and he says it's just not a very well-liked community. He says that community doesn't like police. Listen to the language that he's using. He's already said he's never shot his gun before, and he considered himself to be in a hostile environment, which is not a well-liked community. Does that sound like the kind of guy you want policing your community? Somebody who doesn't want to be there? Somebody who doesn't recognize what he could do to make things better? Unbelievable. He also told the grand jury his original goal was to arrest Brown, and after identifying him as a possible suspect in the shop theft, he says his main goal was to keep an eye on him and just keep him contained until he had people coming there. He said he already knew that he had backup coming, and he knew that they were already in the area for the stealing, which was originally reported. That I don't believe is actually accurate. I don't believe that anybody actually reported that original stealing. So I'm wondering if that is fiction that we're listening to right now. He said that he thought if he could buy 30 seconds of time, that would be his original goal. And that was his goal when he tried to get him to come to the car. He said if he thought if he could buy 30 seconds, someone else would be there and that he could make an arrest and nothing would happen. But that didn't happen that way. We've got to jump to a 3-minute break right now, guys. I'm going to jump back into this story and some other related stories. There was a body found near Michael Brown's apartment building yesterday. It was a body of a young black man in his vehicle, shot to death and burnt. And nobody wants to talk about this. And I have a theory about who that gentleman was and why that happened to him that nobody in the mainstream is going to talk about. So stick it with us here, guys, for this 3-minute break. We'll come right back. My name's JD. We are live. This is the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the 26th day of November. Keep it right here, guys. We'll be right back.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique, affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at hemp. HateUSA.org. Wouldn't it be nice to have one product that replaces more than 10, saving you space, time, and money? HempUSA.org has a complete full-spectrum vitamin mineral detox formulation called Micro Plant Powder Gold. Micro Plant Powder Gold contains 101 vitamins, minerals, probiotics, and iodine, has a 100-year shelf life, and is a perfect addition to any storage shelter. Make Micro Plant Powder Gold your choice. Call 888-910-4367 or visit HempUSA.org today.
The Kev Baker Show.
Monday through Friday, True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up bottom of the hour. We are right in the middle of the news section. Thank you guys very much for joining us and sticking with us through that break. We were just going over Darren Wilson's testimony to the grand jury and some of the things that he said. And the reason I'm talking about all of these things are because I think it's very important to understand what was going on in Darren Wilson's mind. And I'm going to do some editorializing on this, but as you start to see the events unfold through the words of Darren Wilson, what becomes remarkably apparent to me is that this was completely reactionary. The man did not need to pursue Michael Brown. There was no reason for him to leave his car. There was no reason for him to escalate the situation the way that he did. But let's get back into this so you guys can hear what it is that I'm talking about. He was carrying mace, but he was not carrying a stun gun. He told the grand jury he does not normally carry a stun gun. He says, we only have a selected amount, and usually there is one available, but I usually elect not to carry one because it is not the most comfortable thing. They are large. I don't have a lot of room in the front for it to be positioned, according to him. So he was carrying mace, no taser gun, okay? Also said he feared that Brown would beat him to death. Officer Wilson told the grand jury that Brown punched him in the face when the officer drove back to him, and Wilson said he tried to get out of his cruiser, but Brown slammed the door twice and hit him with his fist. He said, I felt that another one of those punches to my face would knock me out or worse, and he said, I'd already taken two to the face, and he didn't think that he would have even taken that, and he said the third one could have been fatal. Again, my thoughts on this one go that if you're a law enforcement officer and you're dressed in a costume and you have guns and weapons and you're essentially trying to pull someone into their vehicle, that person is going to respond with a monumental amount of strength because they are conditioned to be afraid of you. That's how this works. You spend your whole life conditioning these people to be afraid of you and then grab at one of them and don't expect them to fight back. I can't even imagine. Okay, so anyway, he fired 12 times. 12 shots were fired by Wilson. Wilson said he shot 2 shots were fired during the struggle in his police vehicle, and then he fired 3 bursts of gunfire as he chased and then backed away from Brown. He testified that his Sig Sauer 40 caliber held a maximum of 13 bullets. 12 casings were recovered, and 1 bullet remained in the weapon. Again, he unloaded his clip on this guy. So his testimony about the shooting, as Brown turned on him, he says, as he is coming towards me, I tell him and keep telling him to get on the ground, which he does not do. I shoot a series of shot. I don't know how many I shot. I just know that I shot it. I know I missed a couple, but I don't know how many. But I do know that I hit him at least once because I saw his body kind of jerk. He also testified that Brown was not slowing down. It says, at this point, I started backpedaling again. I tell him to get on the ground, get on the ground. He does not. I shoot another round of shots. Again, I don't recall how many hit him. I know that at least one because he flinched again. At this point, it looked like he was almost bulking up to run through the shots, like he was, like it was making him mad that I was shooting at him. And the face, he said, that he had was looking straight through me like I was not even there. I wasn't even anything in his way. He told the jurors that he thought Brown was going to tackle him, just coming straight at me like he was going to run right through me. He says, when he got about 8 to 10 feet away, I looked down, remember looking at my sights and firing. He says, all I can see is his head, and that's what I shot. He says, I don't know how many. I know at least once because I saw the last one go into him, and that was when it went into him. The demeanor on his face went blank. The aggression was gone. It was gone. I mean, I knew he had stopped, and the threat was stopped. And when he fell under his face. also said that Brown reached under his shirt while he was running towards Wilson. So potential there that he thought he could have had a weapon. Goes on to talk about Wilson suffering a bruised face. Here's some interesting stuff. The medical investigator took no photos, said he did not take photos at the scene of Brown's killing because the battery in his camera was dead. Okay, you're a medical investigator. Your only job is to show up and take pictures. Maybe you ought to charge your battery, idiot. And the investigator who goes to the crime scene to collect evidence for the pathologist also did not take measurements of anything at the scene because they said they didn't need to. The investigator, whose name was redacted, said it was pretty self-explanatory what happened. Somebody shot somebody, and there was no question as to any of the distances or anything of that nature when I was there. Unbelievable. So, if there was not a cover-up involved with this, looking at Darren Wilson's face with this supposed bruise that he had, do these guys not learn hand-to-hand combat anymore? Do they not learn how to disarm somebody? I mean, really, the guy fired almost every round in his weapon at this guy, who was 8 to 10 feet away. It just drives me insane. It just drives me insane. Okay, moving on. Related story, a body of a black male reportedly found near Canfield Green Apartments in Ferguson, which is the same complex where Michael Brown was fatally shot by Officer Darren Wilson. KTVI reported that the man in his 20s was shot to death and set on fire. Okay, St. Louis County Police Department is saying that they think this is suspicious. Yeah, you think it's suspicious when a guy is shot to death in his car and lit on fire? Maybe. Let's think about this for a second. He's a 20-year-old kid, right? How old was Michael Brown? Well, 20. How old was Michael Brown's friends? About that same age. They all live in the same neighborhood? Yeah. Who was this kid that just got shot and burnt to death in his car? I'll give you a guess. I'll bet you a dollar to a hole in a donut. This kid was one of the people who testified at this grand jury. He's absolutely one of the witnesses or somebody who was recognized as being somebody who matched the description of one of these people who gave testimony at this grand jury, and they killed him for it. And they killed him for it not even 10 hours after the grand jury deliberations were done. And nobody in the mainstream media is going to talk about that, but I absolutely would bet you a dollar to a hole in a donut that he was either one of the witnesses and either gave information that supported the officer or gave information that negated whatever Michael Brown's witnesses had said, and that information got out, and this man got killed. Young man, I mean, there's more travesties. Travesty piled on top of travesty. But that is what's happening with that situation, and I don't think anybody else is going to go there. Granted, that's conjecture, but I can't imagine anything else that would make that situation realistic in my mind. Also, in relation to this Ferguson case, the National Bar Association has now come out and called for federal charges against Darren Wilson. And this is a big deal also. While the case against Wilson was in state court and not federal, the idea of a prosecutor failing to win an indictment in a case with this much evidence to support both sides of the argument is impossible to fathom. While officer-involved shootings are often the exception to this rule, automatically receiving an indictment, clearly this particular situation is exceptional. The National Bar Association believes that indeed there has been a gross miscarriage of justice here. Last night, they issued the following statement condemning the grand jury decision and calling for the U.S. Department of Justice to file federal charges against Wilson. The National Bar Association is questioning how the grand jury, considering the evidence before them, could reach the conclusion that Darren Wilson should not be indicted and tried for the shooting death of Michael Brown. The National Bar Association President Pamela Means expresses her sincere disappointment with the outcome of the grand jury's decision, but has made it abundantly clear that the National Bar Association stands firm and will be calling on the U.S. Department of Justice to pursue federal charges against Darren Wilson. They go on to say that they will not rest until Michael Brown and his family has justice. And this is interesting to me because it's the Bar Association and not the typical ACLU banter, which usually doesn't get anybody anywhere. But I would imagine that if the Bar Association is going to go to the DOJ and demand a federal investigation, that's going to be a pretty significant deal. Also in the news section today, I went ahead and just added a story from Mashable that came out last night, which is essentially just a lot of pictures from Ferguson that came out yesterday morning. And again, if you go to redpillreports.com and follow along with the news section, you can see some of these pictures. It's really amazing. It does look like a war zone the day after all of this went down. So do check that article out also, hosted at redpillreports.com. I'm going to skip. We've got another story from Op Nate I, and this is a very important story about police officers. No, I'm not going to skip it. We'll talk about this right now. This is a dirty secret going on in the United States while all this Ferguson stuff is going on. And everybody out there knows already that I don't need to editorialize to talk to you guys about my feeling about law enforcement officers. I think they should all be immediately replaced by voluntary peace officers that understand the oath of the Constitution that they took. And I realize I'm speaking very quickly right now, but this is an issue that's very passionate to me and I get excited. So let me slow it down just a hair here. Talk a little bit about America's other dirty little secret. More than 40 cops have been convicted or charged with child rape and sex crimes in the last month in the United States. That's more than one a day, you guys. More than one a day. So while the U.S. media profit off the so-called suspense regarding the kangaroo grand jury decision in Ferguson, Missouri killer cop Darren Wilson and cops across the country are apparently raping children, killing their wives, and selling child pornography with zero media scrutiny. Now, NFL players Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice have been crucified ad nauseum by the state-run media, allegedly because domestic violence and child abuse are big issues that need to be addressed in this country. But it's now clear that said media outlets only wish to improve ratings by tearing down professional athletes and not in addressing actual real issues. A good number of Americans still worship the police as if they are some sort of gods, despite the reality and laws proving the cops are nothing more than armed government mercenaries. The following just shows the links state-run media and the large contingency of Americans who worship cops unconditionally will go to protect their heroes. The power-drunken mentality of U.S. cops is now so out of hand that it's now a life-and-death situation for anyone who is unfortunate enough to encounter one. Most psychologists agree that pedophiles, rapists, and killers do what they feel makes them feel the most powerful. There is no better occupation than cop to obtain quick, unchecked power that requires little training and education. Cops are also comforted by the fact that they are rarely held accountable for their power trips, and the fact remains that domestic violence is twice as likely to happen inside a household with cops than in any other situation. But again, this fact is largely ignored by state-run media. I'm not going to go through all of these instances, but this article, which you can again find at redpillreports.com, shows pictures of all 40 of these law enforcement officers and also talks about the crimes that they committed. Here's one, Tom Fallis, charged with the murder of his wife, shot her in the head for smoking weed because he was a cop and he's better than everyone else. There's a Newton, New Jersey cop charged with lewd acts, exposing his genitals to male drivers. I mean, this is just disgusting. It's just disgusting. So I'm going to get away from that. And I'm going to go back. Robert, I apologize. I should have given you a heads up that I was going to touch on this article again, but I didn't do it. So if everybody wants to look for the article I'm going to talk about right now, this is an article coming out of the Anti-Media, and it's a couple of months old, but I keep returning to it because the article is simply five ways to fix the United States Police Department. And these are five ways that we can fix these problems right now, today. Okay, first one that I always talk about, a National Police Offender Registry. Sex offender registries are common because those who betray the public's trust must be readily identified to prevent a second violation. Law enforcement officers that violate the public trust should not be treated any differently. If an officer is found to have used excessive force or violated a citizen's civil rights or abused the power of their office, they should be added to the registry and be barred from holding law enforcement-related positions for the rest of their lives. Number two, body cameras for all cameras. A city in California instituted a policy requiring officers to wear body cameras at all times while on duty. The results were staggering. A use of force dropped 60% and misconduct complaints fell by 88%. This is mandatory. Body cameras for all law enforcement officers. Number three, departments must terminate every officer named in a settled lawsuit. This seems like common sense, but the fact is that officers who cost millions in lawsuits are routinely allowed to keep their jobs. If a jurisdiction chooses to settle a lawsuit against an officer for excessive force, civil rights violations, or other abuses of power, the department must terminate the officer, and the officer will be placed again on the National Police Offender Registry. Okay? Number four, all lethal force cases go to trial. If it has become evident that police are incapable of providing their own oversight, okay, therefore, let every lethal force instance be judged by a jury. If the officer's body camera was functioning, the proceedings should simply consist of playing the tape. If an officer is found to have used excessive force, the officer would then be remanded to the Department of Corrections. And number five, provide statutory immunity for citizens who kill law enforcement officers under specific circumstances. Not saying I want people to go out and kill officers, but in specific circumstances, such as an officer entering a home without a warrant or articulated probable cause that a crime is imminent and that waiting for a warrant would endanger public safety, a statutory immunity should be granted to citizens who have the right to self-defense and should include in that right of self-defense lethal force. Officers who violate civil rights are not operating in good faith, and a citizen has no duty to comply or obey. So those are the five simple ways that we could fix law enforcement in this country. I think that is ridiculously important. The National Police Registry, I could not say enough good things about. So I really, really, really want to stress that. Also, probably should be mentioned that there are good cops out there. We have constitutional sheriffs. Cannot support those guys enough. People who actually understand what the role of the peace officer is. And obviously, a lot of us are very supportive of the Oath Keepers. You guys who understand what your oath meant, we here at Red Pill thank you and support you. And if you guys, Oath Keepers, you want to come on the show, talk about what it is to be a responsible law enforcement person, man, we would love to have you. I would also love to talk to the guy, what's his name, Darren, oh, I can't think of his name, the guy who has the Threat Assessment Center in Detroit, a private police force that is focused on changing the environment to one that does not promote violent encounters, giving his private police officers the tools they need to break down situations without it divulging into violence. Just amazing. There are great cops out there, and there are great law enforcement officers that understand the roles that they play. And I apologize for harping on the bad ones today, but we're in a battle right now, and we need to get the good ones to be on the right side of the team here, guys. So Oath Keepers, constitutional sheriffs, love you guys, support you, continue doing what you're doing. We will support you here at redpillreports.com forever. Appreciate it, and love. Moving away from Ferguson to another fairly startling report, forget Ferguson, 244 teenagers have been shot in Chicago since the day Michael Brown died. 244 teenagers. So while we've all been watching the events play out in Ferguson, back in Chicagoland, the same old garbage is going on, and the mainstream media is not saying anything about it. We have had 155 homicides, 74% were black males, 725 people shot and wounded, 6 18-year-olds killed, 59 18-year-olds shot and wounded, 29 teenagers between the ages of 13 and 19 killed, and 244 teenagers, pardon me, between the ages of 13 and 19, shot and wounded, 10 of them killed by the CPD. So that translates into a person being shot every 3 hours and 18 minutes and a person being murdered, every 19 hours and 11 minutes. So while the situation in Ferguson is indeed tragic, that situation is playing out all over the country. Man, I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the day in Ferguson and the protests, but I really hope that people stay safe out there, and I really hope we can get through this violent period and get back to where we can start really addressing the issue. Because again, it's not black and white, guys. It's an out of control, undertrained, undereducated law enforcement department there, in my opinion. Anyway, let's move on to some other national news. Statewide vote totals released Monday show an Oregon ballot measure that would require labeling of genetically modified foods was losing, but it's only losing by a mere 809 votes and is going to automatically go into a recount. So results from the 36 counties last week after Election Day showed that Measure 92 was defeated by a margin of only 0.06%, well under the 0.2% threshold needed for a recount. So Oregon being the fourth state in the West to try to reject a labeling requirement for GMO foods, did not win, but they are going to do a recount, so possibly some good news still forthcoming out of Oregon. Jonathan Gruber, the former White House advisor for Obamacare, obviously in hot water right now because of the comments about the stupidity of the American voter. is in even more hot water because now he has agreed to testify at a House panel next month, setting up a healthcare showdown in what could be the final weeks of Congress. The House Oversight and Government Reform Committee will also hear from Obama administration official Marilyn Tavener, who is under fire also this week for inflating enrollment figures with the healthcare law. Remember, she added, about a half a million dental plans to the healthcare tally. Just kind of, you know, slip in some extra numbers in there. But both of these people have played a key role in the major political headaches for the Obama administration, which is obviously now facing allegations of repeated transparency failures and outright deceptions from committee chairman Daryl Issa. And Gruber, an economist at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, will be grilled for a number of speeches he has given since the 2010 that blamed Obama administration for intentionally obscuring details of the healthcare law in order to ensure its passage. Tavener, who leads the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, has also taken a lot of flack after being investigated by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, revealed last week that the Obama enrollment figures had been inflated by nearly a half a million. So both of those people will be testifying about a lack of transparency being a key foundational factor of the passing of Obamacare. So hopefully that will change some things going forward. Let's jump into some economic news really quickly. The market is down about 20 points right now. Gold just below $1,200 an ounce. Silver following suit at $1,663, both up just a touch in early trading today. And let's see what oil is doing. Let me come back to oil here in a second. Pardon me. Actually, some pretty big economic news right now. According to Russia, about 40 states have planned to establish a free trade zone within the Eurasian Economic Union, according to the Speaker of Russia's lower house of parliament said yesterday. This is going to be a European Union that will tie the Asia-Pacific region with Western Europe and probably be keyed right into the BRICS development. So that is an important development internationally there in terms of the economy. A crazy report coming out from the Washington Times saying that Obamacare now offering firms $3,000 incentives to hire illegals over native-born workers. So how does that work? Well, under the new president's under the president's new amnesty plan, businesses will have a $3,000 per employee incentive to hire illegal immigrants over native-born workers because of a quirk with Obamacare. President Obama's temporary amnesty, which lasts 3 years, declares up to 5 million illegal immigrants to be lawful in the country and eligible for work permits, but it still deems them ineligible for public benefits such as buying insurance on Obama's healthcare exchanges. So, under the Affordable Care Act, that means that businesses who hire them won't have to pay a penalty for not providing them with health coverage, making them $3,000 more attractive than a similar native-born worker whom the businesses by law would have to cover. So sneaky, 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 and yet par for the course. So that is what's going on there. There's another interesting story talking about hacked U.S. documents said to reveal the extent of undisclosed U.S. lethal aid for the Ukrainian army. Obviously, we've had a lot of talk about providing them with non-lethal aid, you know, the night vision goggles and communication equipment and things like that. But it has now come out that hackers have gotten into some fairly sensitive reports. When Biden was visiting Ukraine last week, they were actually able to access confidential state documents via a mobile device of one of the U.S. delegation members. And turns out that 400 units of sniper rifles, 2,000 units of assault rifles, 720 hand grenade launchers, nearly 200 mortars and more than 70,000 shells, 150 Stingers, and 420 anti-tank missiles, all provided to the Ukraine on the Kiev side, coming out of your pockets and my pockets, ladies and gentlemen. So, was the government lying to us? Yes, yes, they were. Were they continue to do so? Yes, yes, they will. Let's see here what else is going on. I want to jump into quickly before I forget about it, some tech news, because there's some wild tech news. Sony, oh my gosh, completely shut down yesterday. The day The workday ended very early for Sony Pictures employees yesterday, most of them anyways. The IT crew will probably be logging overtime as they deal with a massive breach perpetuated by a group of hackers calling themselves the GOP or the Guardians of Peace. Although probably it's not this particular Guardians of Peace. There's a very good peace movement called the Guardians of Peace. Probably not those guys. Anyway, the motives are unclear at this point, but what is clear is that this was an attack of almost biblical proportions, guys. So the attack originally breached a single server, and from there it spread like wildfire across Sony's network. The image, which you can see if you go to theredpillreports.com and find this story, is very cryptic. They had an image that showed up on every single Sony computer across the world. It was not just their Sony Pictures nationwide in London. It was every single computer, so employees were forced to shut down their computers. Everything was ground to a halt. And the GOP has already leaked a large zip file containing two massive lists detailing the extent of the hacking. Most of what's inside appears to be from the Sony Pictures finance department, including the stuff of IT guys' nightmares. We're talking Excel sheets, zip files that appear to be full of passwords. There's even a text file that hopefully lists the last 10 recently used passwords for quote-unquote something at Sony. And the existence of those facepalm-worthy files doesn't necessarily come as a shock, but you think Sony would have learned something from their lesson back in 2011, which was the fourth largest data breach in history at the time. But Sony got way messed up yesterday. No indication as to why, but that's what happened there. And another cool little interesting piece of information, an Israeli company now claims they have developed technology that can charge a mobile phone in just a few seconds, and an electric car in a matter of a few minutes. It's based on nanotechnology. Battery can store a much higher charge more quickly and has the ability to retain that power for a longer time. Very cool stuff going on there. China has introduced, this is crazy, the AVIC, which is China's top aerospace manufacturer, is now unveiling the holographic ground control system. Okay, so if you have seen the movie Prometheus, there is a scene in that movie when they are in the captain's area, and there is a mapping sequence that's going on essentially in a 3D holographic so everyone in the room can follow along. That's what these guys have built. Or you could also consider it to be the chessboard from Star Wars, but what they're using it for is real-time unmanned aerial drone operations. They are able to then see in real-time all of the motions. I mean, we're talking Star Trek here, guys. Very crazy that China has this technology. So much more news I couldn't get to. Please go to redpillreports.com. Check out some of the pertinent news from the day. We're going to go to a three-minute break, and when we come back, we'll have Sherry and Chris Geo on. This will be a very enlightening and interesting conversation, I am sure. Thank you guys for sticking with us. We will be right back.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book our universal journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the Iodine Now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at HempUSA.org.
Real people, real radio.
Initiating the Truth Frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live, moving into the second hour of our broadcast today. And we are very fortunate to be joined by the one and only Chris and Sherry Geos. Now, many of you guys might know them from their syndicated show over on GCN and as the program directors here at Truth Frequency Radio. Many of you might not know that the wealth of topics and the diversity of knowledge that these two have is just absolutely astounding. And we were talking a little bit yesterday about some of their various interests. And I'll tell you what, this is going to be one heck of a conversation. So first and foremost, Chris and Cherie, thank you guys so much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
Thank you for inviting us, for sure. And let me say congratulations on the show. You guys are kicking butt, so kudos for that.
Thank you guys so much for taking a risk and putting some no-names on the air, man. It's been a very remarkably wonderful experience, and the reception from the other hosts and some of the listeners has just been overwhelming, and I can't tell you how excited we are to be part of the Truth Frequency Radio family, Chris.
Thank you for saying that, because we've worked really, really hard to build the platform, and that's why we handpick the hosts, because we want to make sure that this is a team all working together, and so far so good. And so we knew you would fit right in as soon as we talked to you guys.
Oh, you're making me blush, but I appreciate it. I like blushing this early in the day. So, Chris, would you do me a favor, though, and just give us all a little bit more insight into your background and how you came into the truth movement, and then maybe talk a little bit about where the concept for Truth Frequency Radio came from and your plans for the future with it?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, me personally, I started just listening to Alex Jones, watching documentaries, things like that. And then I thought to myself, you know what, I want to get more involved. And I was a musician at the time. I still am a musician, but I don't do music very much. And I was working with this hip-hop label, and they asked me to rap a little bit. And I said, no, that's not my thing. I write the music. I don't rap.
Right.
And they said, no, try it. And I did, and it was okay. But, you know, if you're not coming from the heart, then it's just not going to work out the right way.
Yep.
So then I decided, you know what, I've got this message here. Let's try putting together a rap song that's truth-oriented. And I wrote a track called We're in a Lot of Trouble, and I posted it. Alex posted it on its front page. It went all over the place. Michael Tsarian wrote me and asked me if he can use it to open up Irish Origins of Civilization.
Wow.
And I said, wow, there's really something to this. So I decided to do a full album. I never even thought about doing radio. And then I met Cherie, and once we met, we said, hey, let's just start a radio show and just see what happens. And here we are 5 years later, November 5th, 2009, our five year anniversary was just a few days ago, November 5th, 2014. And it has turned into this monster beast that is just, you know, it's operating completely on its own now. And there's so many different energies in it that it's way more than I ever imagined, but it is exactly the type of community situation that we had in mind when we first built it. We were just building it and just going, just a, you know, by the voice that was saying, build it and they'll come, build it and they'll come. And we did. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, here we are.
And I don't want you to be modest, though, Chris, because all the matrices that I've looked at show Truth Frequency at the top of the heap in terms of alternative information and news. I mean, you guys have really built something remarkable, and it honestly is, you know, the best network that there is in existence, as far as I can tell.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, yeah.
Well, I haven't told anybody yet, but because it's not released yet, but I you know, might as well talk about it. I just got back from filming a show with George Norrie. Okay. And George actually told me, he said, Chris, I really love what you're doing with Truth Frequency. You have built the biggest and the best independent station that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Now, this is praise from Caesar.
Oh, yeah.
Right. I really look up to George, and he's inspired me so much. And when he told me that, and I can tell the sincerity that he had when he said it, it wasn't just blowing smoke, but he actually said that, mm-hmm. Out of sincerity, that's when I realized, wow, we are really onto something big here. Mm-hmm.
So what are your plans for the future? Are you just kind of going to let the animal loose and see where it goes, or do you guys have more plans to continue to grow?
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of plans in the works, but the way that I've always done things is I don't talk about the plans until they're actually accomplished. Wow. Because there's a lot of bad energies out there. There's energies that want to stop growth and just hateful, jealous energies. Mm-hmm. So I really don't talk about anything publicly, what's going on, but we do have some major, major things in the works for sure.
Awesome. So we'll all keep our seatbelts on for that. I'm excited to be part of the family as it grows, man. This is just so remarkable. I want to jump over to Cherie real quick because I heard her giggling, so I think she's probably there. Aha, there she is.
I am here.
Okay, Cherie, you and I haven't ever actually spoken, so I have to say I'd like to know everything I could possibly know about you, but mostly, how did you get mixed up or hooked up with such an interesting fella like Chris?
Oh, well, you know, interesting people breed interesting people in their lives. It just, I've always had a pretty interesting life, but I was pretty sheltered. I grew up in a Pentecostal Christian household, and my grandparents that raised me were actually pastors. So I grew up in the exact opposite that Chris grew up in, and the exact opposite environment, but I turned out the exact same way as him. I'm also a musician. I'm mostly just a singer, though, and that's how we kind of met. We met on the Prison Planet Forum back in 2007.
Really?
I believe it was 2007, yeah.
I was a troll and she was a moderator. And she was assigned to keep an eye on me.
In a way.
I was starting trouble.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, really nonchalantly. Somebody asked me to keep an eye on him because he was spreading disinformation, quote unquote, disinformation about no plane theories on 9/11.
Well, I had seen September Clues and I thought that they made a pretty damn good argument. It wasn't that I was spreading disinformation. It was I posted it and I said, hey, what do you guys think about this? Because they're making a pretty damn good argument, at least from what I'm able to see.
And was that argument the lack of planes on 9/11?
The lack of planes on 9/11, yes. But if you look at the footage, yeah, what I took out of it is at the very least, the footage is fake.
Yes.
We know the footage is fake.
Yes.
So after that, it's up for debate.
Okay. And so, Cherie, you didn't agree with that or you just thought, this guy's nuts or what?
I've never heard that before. And so I thought it was crazy at first. And then I thought it was a plot by people that wanted to bash the truth movement and make the truth movement look bad that have infiltrated and put this fake stuff out here so that we would all look stupid. But once I actually saw it, I agreed with them. I thought, oh, that is kind of funny. That is kind of strange. And so we just started talking back and forth, just through instant messenger. And then we started, actually talking in real life on the phone, and we talked on the phone a few times, but we never really got romantically involved at all because I was already married. He was engaged. It just, that was not in our minds at all. And then one day
I said as a joke, because I got into an argument with my fiance because I wanted to go see David Icke and I was going to be gone for a week and she didn't want to go. Mm-hmm. And I told Cherie, do you want to go with me? My fiance doesn't want to go. And she says, yeah, come pick me up. And I said, no, I'm just kidding. I was just, you know, I was just kidding about that. And she said, no, really, come and pick me up. I'm three
I'm
and a half hours
kidding.
Away. I'll be ready. Wow. And I said, okay. And I went and picked her up. She got in the car with a total stranger, drove up to Santa Fe. We saw David Icke, hung out with him for a while. And actually, the person that was throwing the event turned out to be one of our guides who has guided us through this entire journey. Her name is Nancy Wallace. We've had her on the show many times. And her tarot readings that she does for us, which is once every 6 months, mm-hmm. have been so chillingly spot on that I can't look at it any other way except for this woman is tapped in and she knows exactly what she's doing.
Right. Do you, when you guys do your tarot readings, do you guys read them, or do you ask questions as a team? Like, are you trying to, or does she do individual tarot readings for you and Cherie?
No, actually, each reading we've had has been as a team.
As a team, yeah.
We are bound to each other forever.
Yeah.
Literally, this life, next life, any other lives from here on out.
Man, that is so cool. See, I thought maybe yesterday, before I talked to you, Chris, I'm not going to lie, I thought, how are we going to fill an hour talking about Truth Frequency? I mean, it's a great radio station, and I'm sure the story is very interesting, but what am I going to do here? You know, that was what I was thinking. And then you and I started talking, and you started bringing up some subjects that were are absolutely at the peak of my interest. You know, you had my interest meter pegged yesterday. And I want to preface this by saying, you know, I'm still waiting for my – I'm 99% sure I'm not going to get to be an astronaut. I'm still waiting for my call from NASA, but I just, as the days go by, I just feel like I'm probably not going to be able to go explore outer space. Also, the many emails that I've written to the National Oceanic Institute not been returned, so most likely I will not be able to go explore the depths of the ocean. But everybody has a consciousness, and everybody can do internal dimensional, you know, exploration. And that is one of the things that you brought up yesterday that both of you have an interest in, this interdimensional exploration. I wish that you guys would talk to us a little bit about how you got interested in that and what some of the practices are that you guys do in your interdimensional exploration.
Well, I think space travel really hit the nail on the head because it's all about the inner paths to outer space. And when you get into the shamanic rituals, I guess I can start from the beginning. Right before I asked Cherie she wanted to go see David Icke, I had a dream that my grandmother, who was a shaman, showed up in a limousine, and I didn't know her because she lived to be something like 104, 105, maybe even a little bit older. And she wanted to stay alive until my father had a son, which was me. And she held me up to the sky and to the sun and did some kind of Native American ritual. And then she passed away 3 months later. So I really don't remember her at all. And she showed up in my dream, stepped out of a limousine in the mountains. And this was in Texas on top of that. So there were no mountains anywhere around. I had never been around mountains in my life. I had no idea I would be here in Colorado living 5 miles away from Pikes Peak.
Right.
She stepped out of this limousine and she said, "Chris, do you know who I am?" And I said, "I think so. You're my grandmother." And she says, "Yes." She says, this house isn't ready yet, but soon we're going to build it together and it will be ready. And I had no idea what that meant. And then something happened to me that got me interested in DMT and ayahuasca. And that was listening to Joe Rogan, but it was more than just that. Joe's voice and words were just the catalyst which sparked whatever was already naturally inside of me. Mm-hmm. So I began going down the shamanic journey. And once I did that, I realized, wait a minute, there is way more to this life than what I'm doing right now. I had a business of my own. I was working as hard as I could to build that business, and I was doing a really damn good job of it. But I was in the flood restoration business, and I was down working in Hurricane Ike. Mm-hmm. And this was the first realization that I had. I was down there working 36 hours, and then I slept for about 4 hours, and then I worked another 28 hours or something like that. Slept for another 4 hours, and sure, the money was great, but that was the realization that I had. I'm wasting my entire life force. I'm wasting my youth. I'm wasting everything chasing this illusionary paper. And then it even got to the point to where I was making so much money that I didn't want to go on vacation, because not only was it the money that I was spending going on vacation, but if I left work for a week, that could cost me, you know, $5,000 or $10,000.
Right.
Yeah, just, you know, by missing my duties for my business during the week. And I said, you know what? I've got all the money in the world, but I'm a slave. This is not the way to live life. And everything just started to come together as a result of that. And then once I did the ayahuasca, it really showed me exactly what this world is about. And it is not about money. It is not about business. It is about creating the person, not creating, let's word it a different way. It's about remembering who we are and building ourselves up from a point to where from a pure point. See, I can't even put this in words. It's so hard to put into words, but we've been trained to believe we are a certain way and we're supposed to be a certain way. We're supposed to go to school. We're supposed to go to college, work for a corporation, retire at 65, et cetera, et cetera. But no, that's not what it's about. What it's about is remembering who we are and building ourselves up with our true dharma and destiny in mind.
So you mentioned that your grandmother considered herself to be a shaman. I wonder, could you define that term for people who might not understand what that is? And I'm also curious if you yourself consider yourself to be a shaman.
I don't like to call myself a shaman, but I have been called to do shamanic things. Again, this is very hard to put into words, but a shaman is somebody who is considered as having influence over the spirit world and able to communicate with the spirit world. And just naturally, through my use of ayahuasca meditations, I do have a very good understanding at this point of how the energies work behind the scenes. Okay. So you can go into the energy field, manipulate something energetically, and it's just like you're going into a computer and manipulating the actual code or the Windows system files to make the system work in a different way. And so that's what she was able to do, at least from what I can tell. But traditionally, a shaman is somebody who communicates with the spirit world, usually through the use of entheogens or other types of ceremonies like that. She was a Kickapoo tribe, and so she was real, real Native American. My other half is Italian. So the Italian half of me, you know, has this urge to fight the New World Order because I'm not going to put up with anybody's crap.
Right.
And so the two coming together, I feel like I have the best of both because I'm able to understand the energy, but also I have the will to fight within me.
Mm-hmm. You just used a word that I'm very glad that you brought up, entheogen. Could you define that for people who might not know what that means?
An entheogen is a plant. There's many different types of entheogens. A cannabis would be an entheogen as well. So there's not really a set definition for what type of plant it is, but it's a plant that is pretty much psychoactive.
Okay.
And DMT is my preferred method of travel through the use of ayahuasca. I tried smoking it several times, and actually for the first couple of years I did nothing but smoke it. Mm-hmm. But then I realized after you drank it that it's kind of a bastardization to smoke it. It's disrespectful to the plant because it will take you to other worlds, but you're only going to be there so quickly that you're not going to absorb it or anything, and you're going to think you're getting something out of it, but you're really not. Mm. It's like when I was 15, 16 doing LSD at the clubs or at raves, I thought I was having spiritual experiences, but I had no idea. I didn't have a purpose. I didn't have an intent. I didn't have any of this.
Right.
So with entheogens, if you take an intent in with you, then you can really bring something out of it. But everything that I do now is completely natural from the earth, no chemicals added, nothing like that. Mm-hmm. When you brew ayahuasca, it is literally two plants that you're making a tea out of, and you brew it just like you would a regular tea. Mm-hmm. So it's something that the earth has provided for us for a very good reason, and DMT is so plentiful that it exists in so many different plants and so many different animals, as if nature was saying, look, I know how you humans are. I know how egotistical you are. I know you try to ban plants, and you're going to try to do this and try to do that. I'm going to make this substance so plentiful that there is nothing you can do to eliminate this substance.
Hmm. Well, and then I want to come over to Cherie. Given your Pentecostal background, did you find that you were really open to some of this inner exploration, or did you feel like it took a while to kind of come across? And are you also a participant? Do you experience these things also?
Well, you know, there's a big difference between me and people like my sister who grew up in the exact same household. I'm not intimidated mm-hmm. by you're going to go to hell, or you're going to suffer for all eternity, or God is going to abandon you if you abandon God, or those kinds of things never intimidated me. I'm never intimidated by you're going to go to hell. That never really bothered me.
Okay.
What bothered me was the fact that there are a lot of drugs out there that make people act crazy or stupid, or they make them violent, or they make them lose their minds completely, or I've heard about LSD trips where, you know, you never come back from.
Right.
And those were the kind of things that went through my mind when I first thought about entheogens and when he first talked to me about them. But then I started listening to people like Terrence McKenna mm-hmm. and people such as that throughout history who have talked about these entheogens, and really once I understood that these are not drugs. These are not drugs. These are plants that connect you to the planet.
They're tools.
They're tools. Exactly. Yeah. It can be used for good or evil. I agree. But most of the time when people are using ayahuasca, they're not going to a party and getting wasted and, right. and acting stupid and having unprotected sex. No, no, it's nothing like that.
And, you know, the bad things you hear about our ayahuasca, yeah, in the very rare event, oh, I had this horrible experience. That's because the set and setting was wrong and because their intention was wrong.
Well, let's talk.
99 out of 100 times, if somebody has that bad experience, then it's because they're trying to take it and use it as a party drug or something.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about that. What is the environment that you guys, you know, utilize when you're doing ayahuasca? How does that whole process work? You know, what's the time frame? How does that all work?
At first, I wanted to go down to the Amazon and do it with the shaman.
Very Carlos Castaneda of you.
Yes, yes. But then I was speaking with Joe Rogan, and Joe said, Chris, why do you want to go and sit there and get bitten by a bunch of bugs while you're tripping?
That's a good point.
You know, no way.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? That's a really good point.
It is a really good point.
Mm-hmm. And so we do it in our home, in our living room. The first thing we do is sage the entire area, and okay. we clean the house up and down, mm-hmm. As well as shower and, you know, all that good stuff. So there's a cleansing process that goes through. Yeah, that we go through, and even while we're brewing the brew, we pray over it, just sing over it, put good energy into it, sage it several times, and make sure that we clear the energies out completely, because ayahuasca really is a cleansing ceremony from beginning to end. And so you take these two plants, and my favorite is Mimosa hostilis and Syrian rue, which is not traditional ayahuasca, but the Syrian rue is an MAOI, the Mimosa is the DMT-containing plant. And brew those up into a brew that's about 8 to 16 ounces, depending on how many people are going to be drinking. And it takes all day. It takes, you know, 6-8 hours. Although a friend of mine, he actually just tried the magical butter machine. And he said he had really, really good success with it. And so I'm going to try that next time.
But what is the magical butter machine? I've never even heard of that.
The magical butter machine, it's supposed to be for making like cannabis oil and things like that,
oh, okay.
but you can also extract other type of plants as well. And so mm-hmm. I'm going to try it with the magical butter machine because, you know, we don't have time at this point in time to go to the Amazon and to learn all this stuff because we're at a very critical time right now, energetically, where there's a battle of light and darkness going on. And we need as many light workers to stand up and join the fight and to help reset the balance of this world because it's way, way over, it's way, way off in the darkness. But I'm maybe getting a little bit ahead of myself. So once we start doing the ceremony, I usually like to put on a shamanic drumming or some type of music that doesn't have any words.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I feel like the words pull me back into this realm as I'm trying to go deeper. So if I put on Pink Floyd or something like that and I start to recognize English words that I understand, then it brings me back and I can't go as far.
Okay.
So there is still an element of the spirituality, the native spirituality that I like to inject into the ceremonies. But really, I wrap myself in a blanket and I'm gone for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. Literally gone for 3 hours. Not in the room anymore. I like to take the Superman doses because the way I see it, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it the right way. And there's nothing to be worried about at all. The only thing that is to fear is fear itself. And I'm not trying to be cliche by saying that, but it's very true mm-hmm. because during my first experiences, I was afraid to let go. And I don't want to see what's on the other side. Something was just scaring me for some reason. I don't want to let go of my body. I don't want my spirit to travel and it would hinder my experiences. Mm-hmm. But once I was just thrusted into that hyperspace realm, one time when I did way too much, then I realized, oh my God, there is nothing to worry about here. It's a loving, embraceful energy that is a great, great, great teacher. And because of that, now I'm in the mindset of let's go as deep as we can. I usually do two doses in one evening, one about 250 milligrams and the second about 250 milligrams as well. So I'll purge first and then take the second one. And that's when the really heavy experiences start to happen. But set and setting, definitely very, very important. You don't want to do it around people that you don't trust
right.
because you will be gone and you don't want to have to watch your back. I did have one experience when a friend came over and he set this knife down on the table. And that knife just threw my whole experience just off because I was focused on that knife as I was leaving. I was like, oh my God, you know, that's, I just started thinking about things that people do with knives, and it just, you know, threw the experience off. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's another example. Get the stuff out of, you know, get all that kind of stuff out of the way. Another friend of mine, when they were smoking DMT with several people, and then they break out their guns. And I'm like, don't do that. Don't mix those energies together. They're not to be mixed out and mixed together. So yeah, set and setting is definitely very important.
Well, and in that vein, does one of you stay behind as a babysitter, or do you guys both do it at the same time?
Sometimes.
Really?
Cherie has been doing that lately.
Yeah.
But initially, we just both just blast off.
I mean,
there's, like I said, there's nothing to worry about. Your body will take care of itself. That's what I've been told and shown many, many times over. My biggest fear is to, I feel like I can't leave my body until I've thrown up, because I'm afraid that I'm going to go out like Jimi Hendrix or something if I do. But I've never had an experience to where I've been out of control. Even if I don't purge right off the bat, I still leave my body. And then if my body says, you're going to purge, I always find that I can get up, go to the bathroom or grab the bucket or whatever it is that I need to do, and I still have plenty of time before that projectile vomiting comes up. That, I mean, it is really uncontrollable once it starts to come up, but the body just naturally suppresses that until you're at a spot where you can do it. It's very hard to explain, but your body will take care of itself. That's what it's told me over and over again. Don't worry, your body will take care of itself.
Well, you know, some people might consider projectile vomiting to be kind of a negative in terms of doing ayahuasca. How do you counter that?
It is a great feeling.
It feels wonderful.
Because you're cleansing all of the energy. So you're cleansing, first you cleanse the house, then you cleanse the brew, and then the brew cleanses your physical body, and then the brew cleanses your spiritual body as well. It's all part of the experience. Mm-hmm. Now, there's ways to brew it to where you don't purge, but I like it, because even though for the first couple of seconds it may feel uncomfortable, every single time it's happened, I always look up at Cherie and go, oh my God, that felt wonderful. Because you're releasing all of that negative energy from within you.
Right. Well, and you also have to, I liken it to the chicken and the egg. You know, before the chicken can experience this world, he's got to break out of the only world that he ever has known. And I always find that to be kind of an interesting corollary to this stuff. Sometimes you've got to go through some violent transitions or some negative to get to someplace positive. And so I think I love the way that this conversation is going. I want to come back from the break in just a few minutes and talk a little bit about what we think that the ayahuasca is actually doing to our body, what components it's actually interacting with, and then talk a little bit to both of you about some of the experiences that you guys have had out there, and find out if that out there is what I think it is, being an out-of-body type experience. But I cannot stress to you guys enough how appreciative I am for you guys being here today. We'll be back in 3 minutes, and we'll just jump right back in. Thanks, you guys, for being here.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Gardener.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
We'll all get up. It'll be anarchy.
Anarchy!
Lit Free FM with Nathan Frazier.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is bottom of the second hour, and we are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday. Super excited right now to be speaking with Cherie and Chris Geo. Many of you know them as the program directors over here at the Truth Frequency Radio Network, but they also have their own syndicated show on GCN, and I can imagine that I am now a fan and will be tuning in all the time if this is the type of thing that you guys talk about, because this is super fascinating stuff. So for those of you just tuning in, we have been talking about interdimensional exploration via entheogens such as ayahuasca and DMT. And I think one of the questions that I've got for you guys both in your opinions, is this something that you think everyone should try, or are there only certain people that you think should be experimenting with their inner consciousness exploration?
Oh, if it was up to me, I'd put it in the water supply.
I know you would.
Wow. But,
seriously speaking, though, no, I'm just joking when I say that. I mean, I think everybody should see what ayahuasca has and what the other side is. I can't imagine if I was to die without, you know, having a psychedelic experience. And I know people who have, and I think of what a shock it must be for them to leave their bodies and not know what it's like. And so when I first started doing DMT, my intent was to navigate the spirit realm much better. So when I die, I can go into another realm instead of being sucked into a wheel of reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And it changed completely. My whole perception on everything completely changed. Fear was removed from every element of my life, because once you realize that you are a spirit in a body, not a body with a spirit, then you can start to look at this world and say, there's nothing anybody can do to me because I'm infinite consciousness. What's the worst they can do? They can kill me? So what? I'm going to live forever any way it goes. And then you can start to really fulfill your dharma and destiny in a much, much more concise way, because you're more confident of what you're doing. I can stand in front of a police officer now and talk him down very, very quickly. I had guns in my face at one point in time, in handcuffs with police with guns in my face, and I was demanding they take the handcuffs off. And, you know, just looked at him in a very, handled the situation in a very, not authoritative, but in a way that I was sure of myself with authority. And they did. 60 seconds later, they were taking the cuffs off me, apologizing profusely, then trying to divert my attention away from the fact that they just stomped all over my civil liberties
right,
to the Snoop Dogg concert at Red Rocks. it was pretty funny to see. But you start vibrating at this higher frequency level, and then the negative energies, like the police department, or not the department, the police state that we're living in, they just can't affect you, because you can navigate your way out of those situations successfully. And people like that, the lower frequency vibrations, they feed off of fear. So when you project that fear, it just makes them salivate and they just feed on it more and more and more and more. But when they encounter somebody that has no fear, can stay completely calm and knows exactly what to say, how to say it, and from what level to say it on, something sparks in them and they say, wait a minute, I'm not dealing with a normal person here. This guy's going to be trouble for me. I better leave him alone and just, you know, keep on walking and go find, you know, somebody else to mess with, because there's 1,000 people in line behind him who are just going to bow down to my feet and lick my boots. So that's just one example on how ayahuasca has helped to help me get a better understanding of who exactly I am. Now, I'm not saying that anybody should go out there and do anything stupid just because you think you have this type of higher frequency vibrational power that you can achieve with this kind of, you know, substance or use or understanding. But still, it's just one example in my life on how it's changed. But it's already, it's all about cleansing yourself. And as we said, you cleanse the environment, you purge. And then after that, the first few experiences, at least in my journey, were about cleansing my spirit. And my spirit was tied down to many, many different things. One example that I can give is some childhood trauma. I had no idea what this childhood trauma is, but I found that situations in my past, without me even knowing it, were causing behavioral patterns and traits in the present, in my older self. And I didn't make the connection between the two, but the ayahuasca showed me, when you react like this to something, it's because of this that happened in your childhood here. So now that you understand that and you can see what's going on, now you can change it. Another situation, there were three events that happened in my childhood that I still don't know what they are, but the ayahuasca showed me this box. And within that box, there were three balls. And I went up to the box and I opened up the box and I took out these three balls and I said, oh, I know exactly what this is. This is childhood trauma. And so I had two options at this point. The option to really examine these balls. And once I did, and this is all symbolic, of course,
right,
but examine these balls and try to understand the situations. But I realized that my spirit had a tether to this box and I couldn't move any further until that tether was broken. So I could have examined it, tried to understand it and all that. But I said, no way. You know, there's not enough time left. I took a sword, and metaphorically, of course, I took a sword and just cut that tether from the box. Wow. And all of a sudden, once I did, boom, you know, blast off into other realms of understanding that I can't even imagine. But there is definitely a cleansing cycle that goes along with the spirit. My mother passed away on Christmas Eve of 2010. And so that was very, very traumatic for me because I used to talk to her every single day. And you know, the European moms, how they
yes.
are.
In Europe, I'm Italian as well, so yes.
Okay, so you know, yeah. Mama is mama, no matter how old you are. So, so that was very painful. But there was one situation when I actually said goodbye and I let go of that. Not let go of her memory, not let go of who she was or the impact she had upon me, but I let go of all the grief and all the sorrow that I had as a result of it. And that even helped me to achieve even higher states of consciousness because of that. So it's all these attachments that you let go of. Now, physically speaking, there is something that happens in the brain during ayahuasca. They have done MRIs on people who have done ayahuasca under the influence of ayahuasca. Excuse me. So let's say you get bit by a dog when you're young. Mm-hmm. And so every time you hear a dog bark, your brain has actually burned in the neurons a pathway to fear it, to relate to that dog bite. Because it's when you have a traumatic experience, it literally changes your brain, your physical brain makeup.
Hmm.
And so your brain is always going to react with the path of least resistance. So your brain is already trained. I got bit by a dog. Dogs are scary. Every time I hear a dog, I'm going to be scared.
Right.
Ayahuasca literally, and this is proven by MRI, will rewire the brain to where you can take a traumatic experience like that, and instead of react to it out of fear, you can rewire it to react out of love.
Is
something physical going on here as well.
Is that a permanent rewiring or just a under the influence rewiring?
No. It's a permanent rewiring.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow. That is
because
powerful.
The brain, yeah, like I said, the brain will burn these neural pathways into itself as you're having your experiences throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the brain will take the path of least resistance.
Right. It's a defense mechanism.
Right. And the pre-burned pathways.
Okay.
So it's unburning those pathways and burning new pathways, to reroute certain feelings.
Wow. What about Cherie? What about you with your experiences? Have you had similar experiences, or are things different for you?
Well, you know, I think things are different for me, not because I'm not as spiritually aware or anything like that, but more because I'm a woman. And with women, we are already halfway there already. You know how women are always, oh, I have a bad feeling about this. Don't go down this road. Very intuitive. So we're already halfway there. So men can use ayahuasca every day, no problem. But women, if you're on your cycle, for instance, you shouldn't do ayahuasca. If you're not entirely in the right mindset, you shouldn't do ayahuasca. If you feel like you're at a place where you're kind of angry in any way, you shouldn't do ayahuasca. Right. It's very, very, very tricky when it comes to women and ayahuasca. There are many shamans down in the Amazon who flat out refuse to give women ayahuasca if they're on their cycle, simply because ayahuasca is a very jealous spirit. And if she smells that or sex or any kind of anything that's going to compete with her energy, she's going to fight. Wow. And so when you have a bunch of people doing ayahuasca and one person is on their cycle, it's going to throw off everybody.
It's worth mentioning the preparation that goes into it as well.
Yes.
Because I try to fast for 3 to 5 days prior to taking it. Although I've taken it because we had out of town company at last minute and we just did not have time to prepare, and everything was great still. But you want to stay away from certain types of foods like cheeses, pork, and any kind of bacon. I always fast from meat completely for about 5 days leading up to it. Yeah, fermented foods. And I'll eat maybe some cheese and beans and rice for the first 2 days. And then the last 3 days, it's nothing but vegetables that come from the earth, literally. Mm-hmm. And then on the day of, I don't eat anything at all, period. And that also helps to cleanse all of your body. When you purge, it's a lot easier to purge as well. And abstaining from sex, too. And it's more of a spiritual thing than anything else. I mean, you can have sex the day before and still do ayahuasca. Mm-hmm. But if you abstain from it, you just feel like the spiritual energy is just that much more powerful. And monks and other people have been practicing this abstinence to hone their spiritual power. So it's not something that's just kind of made up or kooky. There's something actually to this.
Right. I wonder, though, okay, so we talked a lot about DMT a little bit earlier on, and I am a huge fan of Rick Strassman. I've read Spirit Molecule. It's one of the books that I give away. It's one of the ones I just can't keep in my collection because somebody will be interested in it, and I'll have to give it to him. But I'm wondering if, you know, he correlates the experiences that people have, generally speaking, not on DMT, with near-death experiences, being out of body, to a similar experience with being under the influence of DMT. Do you consider that to be the same thing? I mean, are you essentially providing yourself a near-death experience, or do you feel like those stories from people like that, are they correlatable, you know?
Rick Strassman's book, and he was one of the first people that we interviewed when we started the show, but Rick Strassman's book is actually what scared the hell out of me and made me have that fear as I was bringing in, as I was starting to understand these experiences. I was bringing in this fear because of that very reason, because it is similar to death, very similar, at least from what people describe to near-death experiences to be. I've never died in this lifetime, so I can't tell you for sure. But yes, I do consider it as the in-between realm, the realm where the souls go before they're recycled back into reincarnation or to another plane of existence, or maybe even a lower plane of existence if the soul is really that dark and that deep. I do believe that there is a lower dimension, and there could be multiple lower dimensions that these souls go, like Dick Cheney and George Bush and these people.
Right.
I believe that every soul has a chance for redemption. So it's not like an eternal hell experience, but you have to get recycled back until your karma, your karmic baggage is all done, and then you can move up. That's the way that I understand it. But yes, it is the in-between realm.
Wow. And so empowering too, because, you know, my own experimentation with DMT showed me very conclusively from an early age that, again, you know, your consciousness is infinite. There's nothing that's going to stop your consciousness from continuing on. And that's a very empowering realization to have, because, as you guys have mentioned, it eliminates fear from the equation. And, you know, I've found myself wanting to comfort you know, relatives of mine who are close to death, who've never had any kind of experience with stuff like this, and trying to just say, you don't have anything to worry about. You know, this is just, it's just like Bill Hicks says, just a ride. It's just a ride. It's going to be over soon, and then you're going to start another one, but there's nothing to fear, really. And I think that's been the biggest thing that I've taken away from this discussion today, is that both of you guys kind of agree with that. I'm wondering, Cherie, if you would, if you don't mind, share with us some of the experiences that you've had out there, if you're comfortable in doing that.
Let me jump in for just a moment.
Okay.
Because when you realize that, number one, you're infinite consciousness, number two, that we're all sent here with a destiny and a dharma, then you start to realize as well that, as you said, this ride is going to play out from beginning to the end, and there's nothing that anybody can do to stop that. It's going to end exactly when it's supposed to end. The only person that can mess that up is the individual by not walking the path of the universe and not fulfilling the dharma. So when you start to tap into your true and higher destiny, then there is an element of protection that comes along with it. And I've been in so many situations where I faced death down. I was driving down the freeway in the middle of a storm one time. I started hydroplaning right into this 18-wheeler while we're doing about 65 miles an hour on the freeway.
Right.
I was totally calm, totally cool, totally collected, and I was able to navigate myself out of it by staying calm. We were driving, when we got married, we were driving up Mount Shasta on this just sheet of ice.
Right.
And they don't have rails over there on the side of the mountains like they do here in Colorado. So we started sliding again, coming almost off that mountain, and I realized we were about 1,100 feet, maybe 1,500 feet up above the mountain, and the car stopped literally about 3 feet away from the edge. And I got out and I looked and I said, oh my God. But it just goes to show there's that element of protection there that it won't let anything happen to you. You know, short of me going and picking up a gun and putting it to my head and blowing my brains out. But that's not part of the dharma. That's not part of the plan. So as long as you're staying with that plan, there is that element of protection. And go ahead, Cherie.
Well, you know, honestly, I had better experiences with mushrooms than I did with ayahuasca. And I think that could be a thing with my chemical makeup. Some people are different than other people. But I know that mushrooms for Chris weren't nearly as good as the ayahuasca. So it just, it really is up to the individual. But some individuals, they prefer one entheogen over another, and some, like Chris, prefer that entheogen instead of the other one. So my best experience was with mushrooms. And once I reached a good enough dose, I started to, I came to an understanding that my mother abandoning me when I was 2 years old actually had a lot more impact on me than I had ever thought.
Wow.
And I went through my entire family tree and my entire, like, ancestors all the way back 1,000 years, and I lived through all of that. And I had little glimpses into, oh, okay, so this is why I had to go through this, and this is why I had to go through that. Mm-hmm. And it's like lifting the hood on a car and actually seeing what's going on underneath. Instead of just kind of guessing, oh, well, maybe it's out of gas or maybe there's something wrong with the alternator or something. No, this tells you exactly what needs to be done and what you need to go through in order to experience growth in your life.
Have you had as much success as Chris has had with growth in your life as a result of these experiments?
You know, with entheogens, it has changed everything about my life. I used to be scared. I used to be anxious. I was on a lot of medication at one point for depression and anxiety. And these entheogens, even when I did ayahuasca and I didn't have the best experience ever because I didn't follow the diet exactly correctly and I didn't do the things that I was supposed to do beforehand, the prep work, and I had a, you know, quote unquote bad experience, but I still woke up the next day feeling fantastic. I mean, it felt like my serotonin had just gone through a complete revamp and everything was back to normal. And I wasn't depressed for several months afterward.
Wow. Well, that leads me to my next question, getting back into the perfunctory type stuff. What is the day after like? Because I know I've had several friends who've experimented with all kinds of things, and usually the day after is kind of, you know, your downtime. So what is the day after an ayahuasca experience like?
Cherie and I used to just do it amongst each other, but then we started inviting people into our home to do it as well. And the most profound experiences are when we get done with the experience and then we're talking about it after the experience and the day after. Mm-hmm. So the day after, if you're referring to in terms of like after ecstasy, where you feel like crap.
Awful.
And just, yeah. You're like, what the hell did I do?
Yeah.
It's not like that
it's
at all.
It's the opposite.
No, no. As a matter of fact, after we get down from the ayahuasca, after we talk a little bit, we cook something to eat, usually eggs or something like that.
Right.
And then we sit down and we have a little bit of a breakfast and just start talking about all the experiences. Day after, you feel like you're completely back to normal,
mm-hmm.
except for you have such a higher understanding. And or maybe it's not even an understanding, but you've got a lot to think about at the very least. So there is no ill effects after the fact. Your body actually loves DMT. It loves ayahuasca. It doesn't treat you bad like it does with MDMA or something like that.
Well, that's good news. That makes me a little bit more comfortable. It's really, to be honest, man, it's the vomiting part that I'm just, you lose me at the vomiting part.
It feels good. You can't understand until you go through it, but it feels good because it doesn't happen until the DMT starts to kick in. And once the DMT starts to kick in, you start to feel kind of, like an ecstasy through your body,
yeah.
And it's a loving feeling. And so when you're vomiting, it's not like you're going, oh, like you're sick. You're vomiting like all this stuff is coming out of me and whoom. And then you go, it's a wonderful feeling. It really is. But there are ways to brew it without vomiting. So if that's something that's turning you off, there's ways you can do it. Like, you do several extracts and then boil it down even more and then put some egg whites in it. Remove all the tannins, repeat that process a couple of times, put it in the freezer overnight, let the particles separate, and then you can get a brew that's actually really, really, really clear, and you may not vomit, but the vomiting is definitely something that goes along with this, with the experience, and it's nothing to be afraid of at all.
Well, it's kind of like that feeling like, you know, when somebody's mean to you, and your heart kind of hurts a little bit, and you feel like, ouch, that sucks. You know, like, oh, why did you say that to me? That made me feel bad. It's all of that coming out, and you get released of all of those feelings, all of those hurts and angers. They all come out. They all just go, and you just get them all out, and it just feels like somebody gave you a big hug afterwards.
Wow.
But see, that's another reason we do it in our living room, because after the vomiting, I can get up, go brush my teeth, and come back and wrap myself in a blanket.
Right.
You can't do that in the Amazon.
Right, that's a good point. And nor would you want to, I don't think.
Right.
You guys brought up the point, and I know this is something that we've all harped on here at Red Pill, but obviously we're in a spiritual battle right now, right? There's a battle of light and darkness that is taking place. And you mentioned that earlier in relationship to this ayahuasca trip, and I'm wondering if while you are out there, if you are presented with instances that make that battle of light and darkness more clear. Like what have you seen while you were out there that really shown through to you where you said, okay, that right there is an instance where this light and darkness battle, you know, that's the tip of the spear right there. Have you seen anything like that out there?
Yes, absolutely. And it gets pretty deep and it gets pretty dark as well.
Really?
I'll start from the beginning, which is the, after cleansing yourself, after forgetting everything you've been taught, unlearning everything you've been taught and learning something new, then you're formed, at least with my journeys, I was formed into a light warrior. And there were many different trials and tribulations that I had to go through in order to get to the real realms of understanding. I was shown some things that were pretty horrific. Demon faces, decapitated bodies, things like that.
Wow.
Body parts. And then I was looking at this thing, at the stuff, and I had the option to just, you know, look at a higher or look lower or look somewhere else. But I said, no, I'm going to stare this down. I want to see what's beyond this. And I did. And once I did, I realized it's kind of like a security system that's put up. Are you ready to see what's on the other side? If you are, you have to face this down.
Wow.
There was another experience I had where I was standing in hell. There was fire all over the place and demon faces coming out of the fire. But there was this big bubble around me and nothing could touch me. And then I saw these two swords appear. One was a physical sword and one was a light sword. And it was like, choose which one you want. And I grabbed the light sword and it said, look, you can use this to combat the darkness. And so I was like using it to smash all these demons. And then after that, it went into a whole nother realm of understanding, which, you know, to get into this topic, it takes hours and hours and hours.
Right.
But there is a forging of the self first. Now, what I was shown is that we live in a universal light construct. And some people would disagree with me with this analysis, but we live in a universal light construct, and there is a balance of light and darkness that naturally exists, and it exists in order to provoke spiritual evolution and growth.
Okay.
However, outside of this matrix, there is a dark energy that is looking to take over this matrix, this realm, this light realm that we live in. Yeah, and all it wants to do is just destroy it. And it's throwing the balance off completely. I saw a rip in the universal matrix with an eye staring right through it, a big, large reptilian eye. And I could see that was the darkness. That was the Satan energy. For lack of a better term, I'm just using that because people kind of understand where I'm coming from in that regard. But it was peering through, and it was dripping darkness into our reality. And this is happening universally, not just here on Earth. But this darkness has taken hold of these world leaders. It's taken hold of regular people. It's taken hold I read stories of mothers who are putting their children in microwaves and people who are burying their children alive for absolutely no reason. This is that darkness that I'm talking about that is manifesting itself in this physical matrix. And we have to combat the darkness, and we have to rebalance it. And there isn't really anything we can do physically, it's more energetically, but just our awareness and the way that we shine our light within us helps offset this balance. And that's why we need as many people to turn this light on as possible and start to shine that light, because just our mere presence here is enough to regain the balance.
Wow, that is so incredible. I mean, that is just absolutely amazing. But, you know, what do you say to the people out there who say, well, you're just taking a drug. All of these experiences you have, they're just a result of you taking a drug. None of it's real. How do you counter that argument? And we're just out of time, so you have to do it pretty quickly.
Yes. Some people are here to be atheists. Some people are here to be Christians. Some people are here to be agnostics. Some people are here to be shaman and healers. We each have a different journey that we're on, and it's each a different evolution in our spirit, in our spiritual growth. So sometimes some people need to believe that there is nothing else to this world besides what we see here in the physical, and that's the journey that they're on. And others are here who need to realize that there is much more to this physical than what we see in front of us. So it's really each individual journeys, and each person just has to make up their own mind and their own decision. Mm-hmm. Nothing anybody can say can change my mind from the truths that I've seen.
Well, and if there's one thing that you can take away from this, is that all truth comes down to perception. You know, we're all on this battlefield alone, so to speak. And, you know, it's what we see and feel on a personal basis that really guides us as we move along this path. Chris, Sherry, thank you guys so much for joining us on the show. This has been a high watermark in terms of interviews on this show. I cannot thank you guys enough.
Thank you for all the hard work you're doing on your show.
Definitely.
A really, really great addition to the network, and we're so glad to have you on the team.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate the fact that you guys think that I work very hard, and I'll keep that secret with me. But I really don't. But anyway, thank you guys again for being here. Tomorrow, reminder to everybody, we are going to be live on Thanksgiving, so if you'd like to join us for the show, Greg Morris will be here. That is all our time today. Guys, take care.
We think first of vague words that are synonyms for progress and pair them with footage of a high-speed train. Science is doing lots of stuff that may or may not have anything to do with us. See how this guy in a lab coat holds up a beaker? That means we do research, but we also do business in the USA, or want you to think we do. Check out this wind energy thing in Indiana, and this blue-collar guy with dirt on his face. Lest you think we're a faceless entity, look at all these attractive people, using a specific ratio of Asian people to black people to women to white men. We want to make sure we represent your needs and interests, or at least a version of your skin color in our ads. Did we put a baby in here? Yep,